You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome, everybody, to tonight's live broadcast of TPC. I'm your host, James Edwards, along with Keith Alexander. We're going to have a lot of fun this evening, welcoming yet another first-time guest making his debut appearance on the broadcast tonight, and we're taking a quick trip over to London this hour. I think our first time out of the country since March Around the World, if I'm not mistaken, and I could be mistaken about that.
I think this is the first year we've had more foreign guests on the show than we've had.
It's
America.
Nip and tuck. We've had quite a bit, and quite a bit of first-time guests this year as well. Going back to the very first broadcast of the year, where we welcomed Chris Cantwell to the program. A little later on than that, Spencer Quinn and Tim Kelly, and then of course a longtime friend but first-time guest, Anke Vandermeersch from Belgium, a senator in Belgium, John Hill, the last living descendant of Confederate Lieutenant General A.P. Hill, making a debut back during our Confederate History Month series. But tonight and right now, we are very excited to welcome Stefan Brockes to the program. Stefan is a writer and editor for both Arctos Media and Europa Terra Nostra, there with our good friend Dan Erickson and Sasha Rossmuller. He is with us tonight. He's going to be talking about a couple of current events and articles that have been dominating the news. And again, we're going to try to have a lot of fun while doing it. So, Stefan, welcome to the broadcast. It's great to have you tonight from the UK.
Thank you very much, James. It's great to be here as well.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about your background, if you don't mind. This is your first time on the show, so you had sent me a bio, but rather than me read it, why don't you just share it with us in your own words? A little bit about your background and how you got from there to here.
Oh, well, I guess to cut a very long story short, I'm 29 years old. I was born in London. My family are all from the former Yugoslavia, ethnic Serbs. Most of them came over here during the 1990s. And I grew up in West London. I wasn't very politically active growing up as a teenager, but once I graduated from what we call secondary school over here, over there you'd have a high school, once I graduated from that and went to college for the first time, I guess you could say, to put it in modern terms, that was my red pill moment, getting into college and just seeing the changes in my local community, my West London community. Growing up in the 90s and early 2000s, it was still a very diverse area, but still quintessentially English, British area. But seeing how newcomers and the area generally becoming more diverse, it sort of brought with it the cons, shall we say, of such a thing: higher crime rate, the general shutting down of domestic local stores, and the creation of more, shall we say, the foreign shops and foreign stores and just general community centres like that. And it just took away from the quintessential English-British nature of it all. And once I started university, I spent 5 years there doing war studies for my undergraduate and international conflict analysis for my postgraduate degree, did 2 years of that. That's when my university experiences effectively confirmed what I've been hearing from the dissident right before about multiculturalism, left-wing ideology, cultural Marxism, liberalism, and so on and so forth. And once I, by the time I left university in 2019, I eventually left the United Kingdom, went to Serbia, my ancestral homeland. I sort of deported myself, shall we say. And I've been there ever since. I still commute back to the UK to see friends and whatnot.
Which is where you're at. Which is where you're at this evening. And I should have mentioned there at the top that you are an ethnic Serb that was born in London, and you lived the majority of your life to this point in the UK. And then, as you were just sharing, you witnessed firsthand the negative demographic and socio-cultural changes which took place in your community there in the western part of London. And those experiences rapidly changed you into someone who went from the center-right of the political spectrum to an ethnic nationalist, Keith.
Right. It's very interesting. I was just thinking, you know, you went from a frying pan into the fire, basically going to Serbia. If you went there in the, I don't know if you went there in the 90s, but compare Serbia with London in terms of ethnic mixture and things like this, and
overall racial and spiritual health.
Yeah, ethnic clashes, things like this. How would you compare them?
So I would say both countries are, of course, I guess you could say ethnically diverse. However, the difference between Serbia and the UK, the UK is, to use a rather negative connotation, it's a melting pot of various different cultures. Now you have basically everybody from every corner of the world is in the UK, especially in London. You've got people from outside of Europe, sub-Saharan Africa, North Africa, the Middle East, Central Asia, Southeast Asia, South America, and every other part of the world here. To the point where I believe UK's population is now 68 million, pushing 69, 70 million now. And the contributing factor to that rapid rise in demographics and population are foreigners from outside the UK. Whereas in Serbia, however, it is a diverse multicultural country as well, but not in the same way as countries such as the UK, France, Sweden, Germany. The overwhelming majority of our ethnic minorities are from our neighbours. We have Hungarians in the north, Croats in the northwest, we have some Bosniaks in the southwest, Albanians in the south, Romanians and Bulgarians in the east. You have Gypsies, the Gypsy people all over, scattered around the country as well. And the largest,
you didn't have new Arab arrivals like you did in England. Basically, the ethnic diversity you had in Serbia were people that had been in Europe for generations, right?
And you've traveled extensively across Europe, so you have been there and back again. If you were a father looking to plant a family you want to buy your children a generation or two, do you go to Serbia or do you go to the UK right now?
Oh, honestly, if I had to, I would say to my past self, if I had to go back in time and speak to my younger self, between the UK and Serbia, if I had to bring up a family, bring up children, 100% in Serbia, it's a far safer. Yeah. We do have our problems, of course, as most countries do nowadays, but in terms of quality of life and a general pro-family environment, Serbia is a much, much more pro-family country as opposed to the UK.
Hold on right there, my friend. That's very interesting and giving you a little bit of background on our featured guest for the evening, Stefan Brakas of Arctos Media and Europa Terra Nostra. A little bit of background on who he is and what his story is, and we'll be back with more next.
Hey there, BBC family. This is James Edwards, your host of The Political Cesspool. Folks, I want you to subscribe to the American Free Press, America's last real newspaper. Against all odds, AFP has and continues to publish a populist, independent print newspaper with an unparalleled track record. Founded by a dedicated group of experienced patriots, AFP pulls no punches and tackles the most controversial and pressing issues facing America from an America First perspective. I've worked with the American Free Press since even before the beginning of TPC. Now that's something. You can subscribe to the print edition by visiting AmericanFreePress.net today, or simply pick up a handy digital edition subscription. However you do it, subscribe to the American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, by visiting AmericanFreePress.net or by calling 1-888-699-NEWS, AmericanFreePress.net.
Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies. John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then the more they use the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Look, the media is a lie multiplier, and this multiplication gives more evil, spiritual power to the beast. And that can overwhelm and even deceive the body of Christ, especially when the body is being disobedient to the head. The churches today are incorporated, so they're subordinate to human government. They obey the beast and do nothing to restore our national relationship with God. And the government shall be on his shoulders, Isaiah 9:6. That verse is not for the present-day church. Rather, it is for the end-time church, the body of the line of Judah. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
Are easing into our summer programming here on TPC. You know, we have those two very fun but very intense months in March and in April with our March Around the World and Confederate History Month series. And then we get into this wonderful hodgepodge come May and June and July. A lot of fun programming. Just in the last few weeks, you've heard from Peter Brimelow, Jared Taylor, David Duke, Kevin McDonald, Tom Sunic, Paul Fromm. I guess we did go to Croatia that night on May 6th with Tom Sunic, and to Canada with Paul Fromm. Gregory Hood, another first-time guest making an appearance. Sam Dixon. It's just been a great year of programming so far, and it continues right now with Stefan Brockus of Europa Terra Nostra and Arctos Media. We're going to get to one of his articles that I read this week, and I said, I've got to try to reach out to this guy and get him on the show. But Keith, you had something you wanted to say.
I was in England in the early 70s. I went to a summer school program at Univ College in Oxford and visited all my relatives over there, and that was at the very beginning of the ethnic strife over there. I remember hearing about packy bashing, you know, the working class white native British guys did not really like having the Pakistanis moving them out of their neighborhoods and things like that. So that must have been around the beginning of it. But what is it like now?
In Oxford specifically, or just general England now?
No, just in, I consider Oxford the part of the home counties, you know, basically suburban London. But in London, I guess, which is where you're from, packy bashing was, something that was unique and new back in the early 70s. I understand there's probably a lot more ethnic conflict now, but I want to hear from the horse's mouth what you think, what's your assessment?
Quick answer on that, and then we're going to go down to Egypt in a manner of speaking.
Sure. Well, I guess in terms of the racial bashing, so to speak, it's completely reversed since the 70s. Now you can't go a day without hearing in a local... you can't go a day without looking at the local newspapers and just seeing more reports of local English, British people getting beaten up or stabbed or shot by various gangs such as the Afro-Caribbean or the Arabic gangs here. Just recently, I'd say a few months ago, we had an elderly gentleman in his 80s or 90s, just in the next town over from me, on his mobility scooter. He just got jumped and stabbed and killed by one of these gang members for no other reason other than that they just wanted a little bit of money from him and his scooter even. So yeah. it's unfortunately becoming more and more common for the white people, especially English, British people, to get bashed, so to speak.
Well, it sounds like Memphis. You know, we had the watermelon man that just got killed here, a guy that sells watermelons off the back of his truck. A couple of so-called minorities just rolled up and shot him for the cash that he had on him. Very small amount of money. He died. And what does Memphis and London have in common now that they didn't have in common in the 60s and 70s?
Diversity. The blessings of diversity.
To this extent. That's right. Well, let's take a radical departure and an abrupt pivot here and move to something that I wanted specifically to ask Stefan about, because I saw this was making a lot of news, and that was Netflix's release of a documentary film on Cleopatra, in which Cleopatra appears as black, as the actress playing her is black. I'm reading now from his column at Europa Terra Nostra, and Stefan writes, "Once again, the mainstream media takes a white historical figure and hires a non-white person to play them in a new on-screen portrayal. While this trend of taking white characters, both fictitious and historical alike, and having them portrayed by non-white actors has been going on for several years now across film, television, and even video games, the most recent controversial race swap revolves around the portrayal of the famous historical figure that is Queen Cleopatra of Egypt. A new documentary series called African Queens has recently been released on Netflix and intends to tell the story of various historical, well, African queens. The first season focused on Nzinga, who was a queen of two territories that now form part of the country of Angola, and it was met with mixed reception from critics, citing its rather lazy and uninspired attempts at portraying an area of African history that gets very little to no attention whatsoever. However, with the recent release, Stefan writes, of the trailer for the upcoming second season of the documentary, the public reception was certainly not mixed at all. It was overwhelmingly negative. Why? Primarily because the second season is set to depict the life of Queen Cleopatra of Egypt, yet Cleopatra herself is set to be played by a black woman. That leads us to the question, who was Cleopatra? And Stefan, I was so impressed with how you sort of traced the genetic lineage of Cleopatra and put it into this article to put history into accord with the facts. In the tradition of our friends over at the Barnes Review, we'll let you take it from there. What were your findings?
Well, I guess this is one of the things that really strikes me as bizarre when it comes to listening to other people from the left and the political center about how they identify Cleopatra. I've seen from my article, and any basic Google can tell anybody, Cleopatra was from the Ptolemaic dynasty, Ptolemy being one of Alexander the Great's generals. So just a very quick Google search by anybody from any political background can tell you Cleopatra was not black. She was not mixed race. Her line was purely ethnically Greek. In fact, her dynasty made it pretty much a personal mission for themselves to keep their line pure. That's why there was so much incest within that dynasty. They wanted to keep that Ptolemaic blood, so to speak, pure. They wanted to keep that genetic lineage and heritage because they thought that their class of as rulers was to be the same as the lineage that came before them. Of course, the ancient Egypt itself was pretty diverse with all these different tribes from the different parts of the, I guess, Egyptian territories around there. But Cleopatra herself, it was and historically proven to have been Greek. So it genuinely blows my mind how anybody can look at her statues even, and think, this is definitely a black woman. And as you saw in my article as well, this is the second season of the show African Queens. And what strikes me as bizarre as well, there is no attention whatsoever on season one on a season which actually focuses on an African black queen. No one pays any attention to that one. However, everybody is paying attention to this season, a show where a historically white white historical figure is being portrayed incorrectly as black. So this is why I genuinely believe, and I guess all of us as nationalists genuinely believe, there is a fundamental agenda behind this, and it's something that's unfortunately becoming a common trend in media.
Well, you know, Stefan, she wasn't even a Greek back then was not like a Greek today. I tell people that Alexander the Great did not look like Zorba the Greek, because the Greeks had, what, 5 centuries plus of Muslim occupation during the Ottoman Empire and whatnot. So, you know, she was probably, you know, She's probably even whiter than most Greeks today in terms of her complexion. And as my English grandmother would have said, this one is black as Nugent's knocker.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring up your grandmother, because that's actually something that they use to sort of justify her portrayal as a black woman. And as Stefan said, I mean, perhaps she was sun-kissed and olive-skinned, as so many people around the Mediterranean are. But no matter what, I mean, she was most certainly white. But I love what you write here, Stefan. Finally and conveniently, near the end of the trailer and amidst the dramatic pause in the music, just to highlight the message even more strongly, an older black woman states that her grandmother had told her once, quote, "I don't care what they taught you in school, Cleopatra was black," end quote. And with all due respect to that woman's grandmother, as confused as she may have been about this belief about Cleopatra, this part of the trailer was obviously the most controversial and sparked the most outrage among audiences. And it did spark outrage. This isn't just something we're so-called racist or upset about it. The Egyptians were absolutely went bananas about it. I don't even think they're
not pleased at all.
Could you comment on that, Stefan?
It's the more the controversy went on, the funnier it got. Usually things like this, it's difficult to see the humor in it, but seeing how insane the backlash was, not just by Europeans, not just by, let alone the Greeks, but by the Egyptians as well, modern Egyptians who have a very different genetic structure to ancient Egyptians. Modern Egyptians have more of the Arab influence from the Arab conquest in the early medieval era. But even then, even they were so outraged by this. I cannot remember who exactly it was, but I believe it, some Egyptian organization, cultural organization, actually ended up suing Netflix.
All right, I'll tell you what. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back on this, spend another minute or two on this, the backlash and some other tangentially related topics, and then we're going to get into the relative success of recent right-wing boycotts, which Stefan has also written about for Europa Terra Nostra. So stay tuned.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Jerry Barmash. Former President Trump is addressing his federal indictment.
This vicious persecution is a travesty of justice.
Speaking at the state GOP convention in Georgia, Trump called the charges, quote, ridiculous and baseless. Trump's remarks on Saturday come a day after the Justice Department unsealed a 37-count indictment against the former president, alleging his mishandling classified documents after leaving office. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is in Oklahoma this weekend. It's the fourth state DeSantis is visiting on his Great American Comeback Tour. More help is headed to Ukraine.
The Biden administration announced another $2.1 billion in security assistance for Ukraine on Friday. The aid package includes air defense and ammunition capabilities. The U.S. has committed $40 billion to Ukraine since Russia's invasion began last February. It comes as Kyiv begins a counteroffensive against invading Russian troops. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Ted Kaczynski, the man known as the Unabomber, has been found dead in his prison cell. Former FBI Special Agent Cliff Watts says the Unabomber opened the floodgates for homegrown terrorism.
He was sending mail bombs, I think as late as the 1970s, going well into the 1990s, if I remember correctly. And it was during the era when we were worried about domestic terrorism.
Kaczynski, who was referred to as America's most prolific bomber, was arrested in 1996. He was 81. Saudi Arabia and the United States are announcing a 24-hour ceasefire between the Sudanese armed forces and rapid support forces. Both factions agreed to rest and let humanitarian aid get through to citizens throughout Sudan. President Biden is praising the LGBTQ community for their courage and for the hope and light they generate for people. Biden called the LGBTQ community, quote, some of the bravest and most inspiring people he's known. This is USA News.
Greece is cheap.
But the airfare costs a fortune.
Paris?
Not much closer, and again, airfare.
What about Puerto Vallarta?
Let's face it, flying anywhere is just too expensive.
Wait, what's this?
low-cost airlines.
With one call to low-cost airlines, you'll drastically slash your travel costs. We're talking insanely low airline prices to any of your favorite destinations. Where would you like to go? London, Rome, Costa Rica, Australia?
Wow, that's cheap.
So why wait? Call now to learn how crazy cheap it is to fly anywhere in the U.S. or international. Our prices are so low, we can't publish them. The only way to get them is to call to instantly hear the most amazing best deals on airline travel. It's that easy. So call now and start packing.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
If you see her on the street, don't try to choose her.
Go, Granny, go, Granny, go, Granny, go.
You might drive a goer, but you'll never lose her.
Go, Granny, go, Granny, go, Granny, go.
Well, she's gonna get a ticket now, sooner or later, cause she can't keep her foot off the accelerator. And everybody's saying that there's nobody meaner than the little old lady from Pasadena.
Don't she drive me? Then she drives me along.
She's the terror of Colorado Boulevard.
It's the little.
It is summertime at TPC, and we thank you, ladies and gentlemen, one and all, for sticking with us and making us a show of all seasons through the ebbs and flows of our broadcast calendar, and here having a little fun tonight with Stefan Brockes, talking with him about his background, talking with him about some of the articles he has written for Europa Terra Nostra, also for Arctos Media, and what a great job they do, by the way. One more thing about the Cleopatra. As you mentioned, it's really nonsensical. You write this, Stefan. Firstly, Cleopatra's heritage has not been the subject of academic debate whatsoever. Her Greek heritage has been universally accepted by academics worldwide as a fact. And there's a plethora of historical evidence to support this, the fact that she is white. Even Hollywood has always correctly portrayed her as a woman with white skin. She was white, obviously. But to combat that, you have on this Netflix a black woman saying her grandmother told her that she was black, and that's just all there is to it. That was basically the argument. But the other side of the argument. But I like how you end this, too, because you say, listen, I mean, they're doing a disservice not only to our people, but to their people as well. I do enjoy reading about the real heroes of other people, not the people who have been portrayed as heroes who are not heroes like Martin Luther King. But speaking of, you know, for instance, the heroes of the American Indians or of people like Montezuma, I love reading history about people like that. And at least they fought. At least we have that in common. I don't mind reading real history about people of different cultures and races than myself. But what is the problem here? And why are people so upset that the media would act the only racist
and
white
supremacist? Why is the media so interested in projecting this anti-white, pro-black idea on the public generally? Why are we hearing about this almost exclusively today? It's where, you know, white people are thrust to the bottom of the totem pole, basically, when it comes to jobs in Hollywood as actors, for example.
Multiple part question there, Stefan. Take it any way you want.
Well, especially with the question asking exactly why, what is people's agenda behind doing this? I think one particular aspect of that not many people touch upon is that, of course, us as nationalists, we are, I guess by nature, history lovers. We have very strong historical awareness, not just of ourselves and our own respective people, but about other cultures as well. The reason we're nationalists in the first place is largely because we have been influenced and we're knowledgeable about our own past, our own heritage. We know where we come from, and we also enjoy looking into other people's heritage. I think one particular aspect why, especially within the black community nowadays with this whole Black Lives Matter movement, etc., I think one of the key reasons they're so obsessed with wanting to replace, I guess in media, they want to replace white historical figures with black actors and actresses. I think one key factor behind that is that they themselves are not aware of their own heritage. I personally think that if they were more aware of their own people, their own background, they would be more inclined to explore more about their own heritage. Personally, to this day, I don't know why we don't have this yet. as you said, James, you also love looking into histories about other nations, other cultures. For me personally, I would absolutely love to see a modern media portrayal of the Harlem Hellfighters of the First World War, the 369th Infantry Regiment, all mostly African American, some Puerto Rican as well. That's a fantastic aspect of, I guess you could say, Black history as well, where these heroic group of figures fighting for the Americans and for the French as well in the First World War. And yet we don't see anything about them. We don't hear anything about them whatsoever. Instead, what we get Netflix, we get Amazon Prime, we have other forms of media taking established European, white European history and replacing all those figures with Black and mixed race actors and actresses. Why don't we get more interesting stories in the media about African history, about South American history, or Arabic history, or whatnot? I'm 100% sure they have interesting stories to tell as well, but they're just not interested in looking at their own history. They're far more interested.
I would love to see a historical show about Toussaint Louverture's slave rebellion in Haiti.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, but I don't think that they'd like that one.
Well, I mean, I tell you what. I mean, I would take Haiti's constitution over ours. I mean it. I mean, what they did, this is going to be for our people. We're getting rid of everybody else, and we're going to have, I mean, obviously that's why it's a hellhole now, but they were thinking right in that. And of course, you know, I didn't want our people to be slaughtered down there, but that would be something that would, to Stefan's point, that would be something that would interest me. I would like to see an authentic history on the background of him. But it's just, whether it's, I mean, it even annoys me, the new Little Mermaid being black. Now, this is trivial, I get it, but obviously, the Little Mermaid's white. Santa Claus is white. Hans Christian Andersen's character was white. The Little Mermaid statue's in Denmark. And this is something that has also received backlash, not just here in the States, but abroad. It is tanking in Asia. This new live-action Little Mermaid that the Disney company put out is tanking in Asia. Chinese and South Koreans, amongst others over there, are saying, hey, the Little Mermaid, in my mind, is white. This is what one Chinese reviewer wrote. And then you have... So that is offensive on some levels. And then, of course, when you move to people like Alexander Hamilton and even Julius Caesar. You remember Julius Caesar was portrayed by Eddie George, the black football player, in a stage production? I mean,
you can't make this stuff up.
It does get offensive. It's like, do they not have heroes? Do they have to try to co-opt ours? Why aren't they interested in their own history, which is, as you said, the first season of African Queens actually had a legitimate black heroine, but they didn't seem to be interested in that. So I don't know. It's a topic for another day. It is annoying. It is ridiculous, and it should be addressed. And you, Stefan, have addressed it.
And we need to let our children know that this is all a bunch of baloney.
And it's not just whites. Again, I have to say, it is not just whites. The media portrays only white supremacists would be offended at this. Egyptians are furious about it. Chinese and other Asian people groups are looking at the new Little Mermaid as, what is this? This is ridiculous. So it's not. It's hardly just our people. But let's move on, Stefan. We have about 2 or 3 minutes left in this segment. We're running a little bit behind what I had in mind, as we typically do on this program. But we'll catch up. We'll make up the time in the air, as the pilots always tell me. Let's move on to another piece you've written recently for Europa Terra Nostra, and that is talking about the relative success of two right-wing boycotts or conservative boycotts against Target and what was the other one?
Anheuser-Busch.
That's right, Bud Light, respectively. What are the facts on that, Stefan?
Oh, dear. Well, as you probably saw in my article, I guess before this, I was very much a boycott skeptic, as it were. I've been around long enough to have experienced numerous boycott campaigns, but 99% of them just didn't seem to go anywhere. They lasted for about a couple of weeks, and they just sort of
fizzled
out.
That's right. Correct.
But this one, I have to say, I was pleasantly surprised to see how far this went. I've been covering this whole Dylan Mulvaney thing, Bud Light thing, for yonks now. But seeing how insane the backlash was, I was personally surprised how American society has been outraged about this. Just seeing what's basically a man in girl face, woman face, however you want to put it, just taking Bud Light, earning stacks and stacks of cash just by attaching his face onto the side of a beer can or to the side of whatever other fashion brand there is. And the fact that millions upon millions of Americans have lashed out against this so much, have successfully boycotted this. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, it was about 20, as of the writing of the article, $20 billion Bud Light and the parent company Anheuser-Busch lost. To me, that's, at least in my lifetime, that's unprecedented.
But they got to feel that. They're willing to take a certain loss for the greater good of their cause. But $20 billion, I don't care how much you've got to spare, that's got to sting a little bit, right, Stefan?
I mean, I'm not.
We feel $20. If we got a donor out there that doesn't sit $20 in.
I've got a theory about it. Here's what I think is happening. I think that the left was driven so bonkers by Trump's election, they decided to throw caution to the wind, no more subtlety. They were going full speed ahead with their agenda, which includes turning sexual depravity into a civil rights, and that is a bridge too far for a lot of people in America and Europe, and particularly, Bud Light and Anheuser-Busch products are kind of the working man's beer over here, kind of like Guinness is in England and the British Isles. And this was, trying to portray and lionize some type of sexual pervert as the spokesperson for that beer was just a bridge too far for a lot of American working class people, and they're the people that are driving this boycott.
Let's take a break right there, and when we come back, we'll get Stefan's response to that, plus a few more facts and figures. It's not just Bud Light, Target as well, taking billions of dollars worth of losses over this. Listen, they're wrong, and they're dangerously wrong, and they're sickeningly wrong.
And we love them being wrong because they've stepped in.
It's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation also seeks to educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MERICA1ST.com. AmericaFirst.com.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Been a longtime fan of his columns. It's been a pleasure being able to get to know him a little bit better tonight, and this is his debut, but what I hope and trust will not be his final appearance on TPC. We're talking with Stefan Brakas of Europa Terra Nostra, Arctos Media, and he has done us the courtesy, as so many of our international guests have done, of staying up late their local time to be with us live this evening, and I want to thank him again, as we always do, for that. But yes, let's continue on with the conversation we were having in the previous segment, Stefan, about the success of these boycotts, which, as and like you, all of the boycotts, it was a little bit of murmurs here and there with so many of the previous ones over the years, going back decades now, really. It never did really amount to anything, and it faded as quickly as it formed. But these has to have hurt Anheuser-Busch and Target to an extent, and we haven't even gotten to Target yet, but we will. And we hope that pressure can be kept on and then applied elsewhere as well. But continue on with some of the excellent findings of your article about that, which we did cross-post at thepoliticalcesspool.org just this week.
Oh, well, I was actually introduced to the whole Target thing actually while I was writing the article, while doing my research for it. Initially, while writing the article, I was focusing just on the whole Bud Light thing. But then while doing my research into other boycotts in the US and Europe, I came across this whole Target controversy, which to me was arguably more shocking, considering why Target were being boycotted. Of course, with Bud Light, you just had Dylan Mulvaney slapping his face on the cans and whatnot. But hearing that Target have been releasing LGBT-themed clothing for children with so-called tuck-friendly swimwear for young children to accommodate transgender kids, for me, that was 1,000 times more shocking to read about, knowing that this sort of thing is now accepted commercially in the US. If you ask people 10, 15 years ago, oh, do you really think the radical side of this community will start targeting children, they would have called you a far-right conspiracy theorist or whatever. I mean, they still do, but the fact that it's everything that it's funny because it's just how prophetic it was back when we were younger. We told people, we warned you this would happen, and now it's actually happening. We're being criticized for not accepting it. We're just not accepting that transgender children exist, or that children below the age of consent can somehow agree to have their bodies effectively manipulated and butchered to suit an ideological agenda. It's the fact that, you know, evil is real, and I think we're seeing it firsthand in this whole LGBT transgender thing in the US today.
Well, what they're doing, Stefan, is this. They no longer tolerating these people. That's not enough. You've got to embrace them. For example, you've got to be okay with your child having sexual transition surgery, and
before any reasonable age of consent, 8 years old, anything goes. And that's the thing, Keith. I mean, since 2020, it's been the George Floyd riots where non-whites were sacking cities, burning them to the ground, sacking city blocks, and calling it their own.
Mostly peaceful protests.
Yeah, right. Exactly. There was that. There was the whole critical race theory being pushed in school, the transgenderism, the drag queen story hours, and it has elicited a response. Whether or not it can be substantiated and continued on into the future remains to be seen. But I think this whole thing is a house of cards. I've always thought it's a mile wide and an inch deep. Outside of the media, you're meeting a resistance amongst at least half of the country, tens of millions of people.
A lot of people will pretend to be liberal.
That's right.
But when it gets down to children and who their sexual partners are, that's where people will draw the line.
So, these boycotts costing at least these two companies, Anheuser-Busch via Budweiser and Target, tens of billions of dollars. We'll see if it can be continued. We hope that it will. But at the end of the day, as we sit right here tonight, that's all we can talk about. We can't talk about tomorrow yet. But as we sit here tonight, this 10th day of June in the year of our Lord 2023, Stefan, it's a good thing. Am I right?
Or I think the state of the world nowadays, especially the Western world, from a social cultural standpoint, among everything else going on at the moment, I think considering the extremity of what's going on, it's a bit much to say, but every cloud has a, I guess, somewhat silver lining. And I guess the silver lining in this situation is that the amount of people that, especially following on from the release of Matt Walsh's What is a Woman documentary, as soon as that was released for public viewing on Twitter, there's been a massive, massive spike in public awareness in the Western world, or just worldwide, about this whole transgender agenda, ideology, so to speak, people are now finally waking up to the fact that this is not normal. None of this has ever been normal. It will not be normal. And the fact that so many millions of people are now becoming more aware of the horrors of this ideology, this is especially coming up to the election, the US presidential elections next year, and the Republicans rising up in the opinion polls and Biden just nosediving. This is a very, very good time for Americans, and I guess also Canadians and anybody else with the elections coming up, a very good opportunity to essentially say to people and say to undecided voters, look, if you vote in liberals or left-wingers again, you will just get more of this. So one of the best ways to combat against this is to start supporting much more conservative, I guess much more nationalist figures.
Well, the left...
Quick comment from you, Keith, and I got a question to follow up.
Basically, it's give them enough rope and they'll hang themselves. The left has been given enough rope now and they're hanging themselves. They're doing much more to win the argument for conservatives than conservatives could ever have done by themselves.
Well, we're going to talk about this in the next hour, this most recent indictment of Donald Trump. Again, you have Blue State America arresting the president of Red State America. You have a line that is dividing now, which I think is necessary, that we could have never formed ourselves. They are doing the work for us. I think this is all wonderful in many ways.
And trial by jury no longer works in a... racially diverse nation.
And
that's,
Trump
that's
seems
what we're proving.
To be reveling in this. He's fundraising off of it. He's having a good time. I mean, he may very well go to prison. They may very well kill him. But in terms of radicalizing an entire half of the country, they couldn't. We could never do more than what our enemies are doing right now. We will talk more about that in the next hour. But talking about nationalism and the rise of nationalism, let's spend our last couple of minutes together, Stefan. And by the way, folks, if you want to read more, we've only covered two recent articles that our guest Stefan Brockes has written during the live broadcast this evening, the one on Cleopatra, the one on the boycotts. But there are so much more. If you go to thepoliticalcesspool.org, you can link over to his columns for Arctos, also at Europa Terra Nostra. We have that at the very top of our blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org tonight. So get to know Stefan a little bit more. We will look forward to having him back on this program. But
you're one of our daily reads now.
That's absolutely right. And I've enjoyed talking about at least those two articles, but those are only the first two. But with regards to the rise of nationalism, Stefan, there is a Serbian nationalistic party that you're supportive of. Tell us a little bit more about that. And we compared and contrasted the prospects of the UK versus Serbia a little bit earlier this hour. In addition to telling us a little bit more about nationalistic prospects in Serbia, where are, and I love asking this of any European guest that we have on the program, which European nation are we doing the best in right now? Are our people doing the best in? Take it away.
Ooh, it's quite relative depending on exactly which aspect of which social, cultural, national aspect you're looking for issues such as abortion, for example. If you're especially focused on abortion issues, Poland has been very, very much heavy-handed in clamping down on all of that. LGBT issues as well. Very much so. Again, Poland and Hungary have been very, very heavy-handed in stamping any of that propaganda out. Serbia as well has been quite notable recently. Last September, we had the Euro Pride event in Serbia, of which it was not organized by anybody in Serbia. It was organized by the European Union, and everybody who turned up to the Pride Festival were not of Serb background. They were all foreign tourists coming into Belgrade just for that. And of course, the political party that I support now in Serbia, in our language, Zavetnici, that translates roughly into the Oath Keepers. Now, they've been around since the 15th of February 2012, so about just over 11 years now. And they're actually led by a young woman, Milica Djurjevic Stamenkovski. Now, she's been a big name now in Serbian politics because she's in European politics, actually, because she's very, very young. She's turning 33 soon. 33 soon. And she's also, of course, she's a young woman. She's expecting she's expecting twins now. And that, I believe that's one of the things that makes her stand out now in the nationalist community. She's a young woman in a scene that the mainstream would consider very old generation, very masculine. So the fact that she is at the forefront in Serbian nationalist politics as a young woman in a society that's generally quite masculine, it's very hopeful for, I guess, our politics in general. Nationalist politics is very common back home anyway, it's very popular. But especially with her, it's a good message to send to people to tell them, look, nationalism is not about chauvinistic masculinism or whatever. It's also allows anybody, man, woman, young or old, to partake in this as well. We don't ignore people. We're not chauvinistic, we're not nationalists. We accept everybody who's like us.
Well, and that is not the only young woman who I have heard about recently, and thank you for sharing word of her with us and our audience tonight. But our friend Adrian Davis over in the UK recently informed me about a young lady in Italy, I believe, Isabella Peralta. So, yeah, there are some out there, if anybody knows who she is, that are doing some pretty interesting things at very young ages. Stefan, thank you so much for coming on tonight. And another fast hour with a first-time guest.
And don't be a stranger. We
absolutely
need you back.
Absolutely. We'll roll out the red carpet for you anytime. We'd love to welcome you back. Keep the great articles coming. We'll keep talking about them, whether you're on or not. But I think we'll have you back on very soon. And Godspeed to you, and thanks again for staying up past midnight to be with us. We'll be back with the second hour right after this. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got a lot to get into still forthcoming tonight.